Philly's Rasheed Wallace, a very good player back in the day. But that reputation also included a penchant for technical fouls. Wallace alleges that after a while, teeing him up became a competition for the officials.
That's one thing that Tim Donahue, along with a couple other referees, admitted. Okay, whoever has she tonight, let's go ahead and put these bets in. But yeah, they had their little joint who gonna tee me up first. So they purposely wouldn't call fouls and purposely would call fouls on me instead of against.
Coming up, tee for two. Free flowing with Rasheed Wallace on Fresh 24. Rasheed, Abdul, Wallace, Philly born. Wait, I'm just getting rolling here. Philly born, Gratz High School, full-scale Carolina. Played under the great Dean Smith. Won an NBA title under Larry Brown. You live in North Carolina. You're a podcaster. And you're going to be 50 years old this September, if my math is right, Rasheed Wallace. Despite all that Chiefs gear. Welcome to Fresh 24.
Hey, thanks for having me, Mark. So you know, I appreciate it.
So let's get this whole Chiefs thing out of the way. It's really the only Philly team. Like when I say to you, E-A-G-L-E-S, how do you respond? You don't. That's what I mean. But
just wait, like that.
But your Sixers, Flyers, Phillies, right?
All day, every day, the Wings, you know what I'm saying? I'm everything else Philly born and bred. I support Big Five. I love Temple. I love Villanova. I love Drexel. I love St. Joe's. LaSalle. I love all that. It's all Philly. But I'm just not an Eagles fan.
Why not?
A little trauma from when I was younger growing up. My mom had the only TV in the house. So Sundays when they had the home games, you know, she wanted me to turn to the pregame. So I don't want to watch that. I wasn't no football fan like that when I was growing up. So I always cheer for the other team. So when I saw my mom, my aunts and uncles cheering for the Eagles, and then when the other team scored, you know, they huffing, fussing, and cussing at the TV. All right, well, since I can't watch what I want, that's what I'm cheering for. So I always cheer for other teams and remember seeing big plays. I remember seeing Harold Carmichael play. I remember seeing Ron Jaworski, Wilbert Montgomery. You know, the whole Seth Joyner, Scramble Cunningham. You know, I remember seeing different era of Eagles players and everything. And I've liked Eagles players individually. You know, Donovan McNabb, that's my guy, thick and thin. You know, that's my guy. No matter how much they try to dog him, I don't care. That's still my dude. And so I've always liked different Eagle dudes. You know, B-Dawg, that's my guy, too. I love him and his mom. And it's I have my certain Eagles guys that I like and mess with.
So, going with your logic, didn't your family root for the Sixers or root for the Phillies?
Yes.
So, why did you go with the other team? Why did you go with the other team then?
Because they came on more at night. Think about it. It was more of a night game at night. By the time most of them games either came on, I was already in bed. You know what I'm saying? Games coming on at 7:30. I'm in bed already when I'm a young fella. You know, so I didn't get a chance to see the Sixers that much until they was on during the weekend. And so basketball, you know, my older brothers played basketball. So, I want to be like my big brother. So when it came on TV, I didn't mind. But football, it wasn't really my thing growing up. You know, I played it because I had my older cousins in the family play and my big brothers play. So I was like, all right, I'll try it. But started to get too tall, you know. I couldn't get with it, so my mind's like, nah.
By the way, two Super Bowls ago, you got to admit that hold on Bradbury was bullshit, right?
I don't know what you're talking about.
Oh, yeah, you do.
I don't know what you're talking about. That was a hold I saw on Fletcher Cox, too, in the whole little little, what y'all call it, the cheesesteak throw or whatever it was that y'all want to call it.
Yeah, okay. Yeah. All right. All right. Listen, I got to ask you a serious question here. Sure. Why is it that the ball don't lie?
Oh, man, that was just a quick little response that I initially said to a referee one day. But I initially got it from the playgrounds of Philly. You know, just all part of junk talking and hearing that growing up along with some other things. You know, some was profanity, some wasn't. But a lot of it was funny, and it just came out one day, especially when a guy went to the line. And, you know, I knew it was a bogus call. Even the guy who I was supposedly at foul knew it was a bogus call. And when he missed that first one, that's the first thing that blurted out. Ball don't lie.
So, listen, what was it with you and the refs? I mean, you hold the NBA record for technicals at 41. You had a slew of them throughout your career. What was it about you and the refs and you getting teed up so much?
Man, well, the one year I did the 41, I had some personal issues going on. Mm-hmm. It was things going on in my family. And I will admit, I had a short fuse. No matter who it was, you know, I had a short fuse. At the time I was married, I had a short fuse with my wife, a short fuse with my kids, with work. It was personal things going on with me inside of my family. And, you know, I was just going crazy with it. So that's no excuse for my actions on that court. But, you know, I knew what I was doing. But overall, I would say my whole beef come with the refs because it's like, look, why are you sitting there? We know how good Jordan was. We know how good Kobe is. We know how good Shaq is. You know, we know how good these superstar players are. So it's like, dude, they don't need your additional whistles to get what they get. You know what I'm saying? They don't need your extra whistles for to send Mike Jordan to the line an extra two or three times or, you know, to do this and that. Like, these guys are already good. They don't need your help. If you want to make your product better, the guys who need help is the dudes who come in at the end of the game. You know, who's like, all right, those the ones you teach. Those the ones who you bring along. Not the superstars don't need it because they already superstars before most of the referees got in the league. So they don't need your whistles. So I was always, look, I'm out here busting my ass. You out here busting your ass, and so are the other players. So don't shortchange me. If you see a fucking foul, call. My bad. If you see a foul, call it. If not, then, you know what I'm saying, keep going. But don't sit here and make it one-sided where I'm the one, only one fouling. And the guy I'm going against only ends up with one or two fouls. And I get the ball just as much as him? Nah, we know what it is.
Didn't you once allege that the officials would compete among themselves to see who could tee you up first?
Oh, for sure. For sure. That's one thing they had. That's one thing that Tim Donahue, along with a couple other referees, admitted. And I wasn't the only one, which I was surprised by. You know, I thought that, you know, I got on their nerves enough to where it was around the league that, you know, they had their certain pools of, okay, whoever has she tonight, let's go ahead and put these bets in. But come to find out that I wasn't the only one that they felt like that with, which was surprising. But, yeah, they had their little joints who going to tee me up first. You know, so they purposely wouldn't call fouls and purposely would call fouls on me instead of against me. Mm.
Maybe I'm guilty of it just by feeding into it here, but you were a really good player. And yet, when you mention Rasheed Wallace, people say, oh, that's the guy who used to call all the techs. Unfair, maybe?
It doesn't matter to me. And I say that for the simple fact, those are people on the outside looking in. A majority of the media on the outside looking in. But why is it that nobody that I ever played with says that? You know, yeah, they say my stuff about text, but at the end of it, they what? Oh, she the good dude, this and that, blase, blase. Nobody really badmouths me. Why is that? But yet, you got a lot of media and a lot of fans that badmouth me because of what the media says and writes. But I ain't worried about it. As long as the people in my family, as long as my friends who know me, know what type of person that I am for real, off of the court, I'm good with it, Mark.
I'm being positive when I say this. And listen, you had your share of great dunks and all that. But when you played back in the day, you were old school even then. And I'm being positive about that. You weren't flashy. You weren't always looking to score. You got your teammates involved. You boarded. You blocked shots. You played great at both ends. How did you end up that type of player?
Because just what you said, I'm not flashy. I wasn't a media darling. You know, I wasn't the one that was doing all the commercials. I wasn't doing all the media sound bites. And, you know, I wasn't the one they were showing on TV, Sunday afternoons, NBC, this and that. It wasn't me, which I was fine with. You know, that's, I think that was the only difference, that I didn't buy into this whole media package. I didn't buy into this whole little all-star game BS and all of that. No, I'm not here for that. I'm here to play basketball and try to win championships. Yeah, granted, answering media stuff is part of your contract, which I did, but that don't mean that I have to like it. You know what I'm saying? But I fulfilled my obligations. But it was all the whole media thing. That's why I tell people, for me personally, which I really, in my heart, I'm not worried about getting into no Hall of Fame. Because one, I'm already in there. And then two, I'd rather be in the in that Philly Sports Hall of Fame, both with the Philly Black Sports and the Philly Sports Writers Hall of Fame. Because why? Those are the people who saw me grow up. Those are the people who saw me from when I was this big, first started playing basketball down at Sunny Hill, who saw me. Who saw me at Carolina, who saw me out there running along, hunting in park and all. Those are the ones that I really, you know what I'm saying, care about, because that's where it all started at for me. The NBA, I know it's the show, it's the grand stage. It wasn't really that for me. I was just in there to try to win chips.
Okay, and you did certainly in 2004 at Detroit. We're going to talk about that, and we're going to talk about also just growing up, playing under Coach Ellerbe at Gratz, and why you didn't go to Temple and or Villanova. I want to cover some of that, but more on the NBA. What did you love about being a player, and what did you hate about being a player?
I love playing against some of the best athletes in the world. And with the number of guys on the team and the number of guys that actually played in the NBA since the beginning is very, very small compared to other sports. So to be one of the ones who have competed against some of the greatest players who people argue about all day as being a GOAT, I was thankful to compete against Michael Jordan. I was thankful to compete against Kobe, you know, Shaq and Karl Malone, you know, Barkley. I was thankful to compete against a lot of those guys because they were some of the best athletes and basketball players in the world during our prospective era. So I love that night in, night out, you know, all this load management stuff. Nah, only way guys back then couldn't play was you damn near had to have your whole foot falling off your damn body, holding on by the skin. You know, that's the only way. But it was that competition level. It's nothing like it. Night in, night out, you know, football. I love football, but that's only once a week, twice, maybe, you know, Sunday, Thursday or Sunday, Monday, whatever the case may be, Monday, Thursday. But that's only once, twice tops. Baseball, you got what, maybe a week, probably about 8 or 9 games, you know, depending on if it's a double or triple header, if it's part of your division and all of that stuff. But, you know, we night in, night out. And a lot of the things that we're doing out there on that floor, your body isn't supposed to do, but we do it. And, you know, going against other athletes on that skill level, I loved it.
What did you hate about being an NBA player?
The fact that everyone thought that just because that we had big contracts, even like I'm speaking of my era, not today, but you know, big contracts for us back then was like a contract I had 6 year, 80 million, and then you know, you had other guys 5 years, 70 something million, you know, like those were big contracts, and I just hated two things. One, the fact that the paper, USA Today, always put everybody's salary in the paper every year, yo. And it showed you what they make from your highest paid on the team to your lowest paid on the team. I hated that part because that kind of sort of put us out there to be targets for certain people. And I just hated the whole fact of how at certain points, the league tried to take the game, the actual play of the game away for, you know, commercial and advertisement stuff. We're trying to get it big. We're trying to get NBA China and all that, but you're taking away from different parts of integrity of the game that we all grew up with to, okay, don't call travel. Okay, yeah. We're gonna call every time we see guys flop their hair, we're gonna call a foul or the flagrant or whatever. So it was crazy. That's the only part I didn't like about it.
I know you would not have admitted it back then, but now, just between us guys, was there one player, one guy, who you would like say, dude, there's nothing I could do about him. He's too good. He's too tough. Not that he didn't back down, but it was like, right. Man, this guy is just too much sometimes.
For me during my era, I would have to say Shaq, Mark.
Yeah.
It was Shaq.
I get it.
Like, man, that and being in Portland and facing him, you know, at least, you know, that four times a year, and then depending on the playoffs, how that went, it was like, you know, shit, you having nightmares about that dude, especially a young Shaq. And now he's in L.A., he's a little bit more skilled as far as knowledgeable of the game. You know, he knows what certain things is coming. It's like, damn, like, I'm glad he couldn't shoot. Like, I'm glad he couldn't shoot. So, like, man, that would have really been hard, you know what I'm saying? But man, just a force of – he's just a force of nature. And to see a lot of the things that he did, breaking backboards, man, we never saw that. You know, you get a little shattered backboard, but he's breaking a whole support system and shot clocks is falling and everything. It's like, dude, what you expect me to do against that? But I would say he was the one player, but for real, every time, no, I don't care if it was preseason, regular season, or playoffs, like, that's the one player, like, damn, like, it ain't nothing I can really do against him.
Did the refs let him get away with a lot?
No, that, not really. That's one dude I say he had his fair share of whistles, but, you know, we all know why, because most guys are stopping them with flagrant fouls. But it was a lot of times, yeah, I can speak for myself where, you know, I get sued them and, you know, they ain't call it. Because they looked at it like, oh, he the biggest one out here, you know, so it's a couple of guys fouling him, that's no thing. Well, damn, don't pick and choose when you want to call it. You know, call it if you see it.
How much NBA do you watch today?
Here and there. I got a lot of young guys that's playing in the NBA today, you know, on both East and West Coast. So it's more like if I'm able to catch that game, then I got a couple former teammates who's coaches. Head and, you know, assistant. So I try to catch them when I can, but it's nothing that I turn on every week religiously.
When you do catch it, is there a guy playing today who reminds you of you?
No, not really. Not mm-hmm. really, because I say it's a different era. It's a different style of play now. You know, back then when I played, it was more physicality. You know, you already knew you was going to get beat up. Shit, you going against Charles Oakley tonight? Like, damn. I know I'm going to get my ass beat. You're going against Barkley, but now it's a different era. You know, it isn't as physical, so they want more offense. But it's nah, they don't play defense in this era, in my opinion. You know, they pick and choose when they do. So I wouldn't say that it's one particular player today that reminds me of myself.
Yeah, I talking about how the game has changed, I mean, think about it. Teams now are averaging 120 a game. Back then, you could average 90-some and win.
Yes.
It was totally different. And I'm thinking AI's dropping 30 a game during that era. You know what I'm saying?
During that era. Mm-hmm. Kobe dropping 30, 35, right. 40 a game.
Right. Yeah. What would they do today?
Yeah.
Of course, I don't know if would Allen get as many calls. You know what I'm saying? So maybe that would sort of cancel that out. I don't know.
I think he would, though, Mark. I think because for me, the difference is the refereeing. That's the only difference from my era and the era today is the refereeing. Because back then, you come across that middle if you want, you're going to get that forearm shiver trying to come across that middle and post up. Now, if you barely touch a dude, they're going to blow that whistle. And I think players back then had more skill set. You know, they had more than one array. They had more in their repertoire than they do now. Now today, I'm going to try workout moves instead of taking what you give me. If I can't do this move, I'm going to hit you with two dribbles, come with a crossover and a little hesitation. And if you don't fall for it, or if you stumble my progress, I'm going to back it out, either call for a screen, and I'm going to do it again. That's not basketball.
Mm-hmm.
Like, when the last time you seen somebody run a backdoor Princeton play?
Never.
Or
how's
run
never?
A,
never recently. A let's put it that way.
Or, yeah. It's different ever. Different ever.
I think you have so much to give to the game. I think you're really knowledgeable. You're really smart as a player. You've been an assistant, albeit briefly, in the NBA and in college. You were a head coach for a time for a high school back in, 2019 mm-hmm. in Durham, North Carolina. What was mm-hmm. that like with teenagers?
It was fun. It was fun. It felt like they were all my kids. And then, you know, to be honest, that took me back to now I see how Mr. L felt about all of his guys that came through Gratz. You know what I'm saying? You look at all these guys as like my kids, and you really get tied up into, you know, their problems, no matter good or bad. If they having some things at home, you get tied up in that. And, you know, I enjoyed it, man. I enjoyed it. I was able to help make a difference in a lot of younger kids' lives to be able to go to college, where most of them probably wouldn't have had that chance. So I'm thankful that I was able to do that. And I still keep in touch with a lot of guys today, 4 or 5 years later. So it's been a real blessing for me to be able to coach high school for them 2 years.
All right, my friend, it's now halftime, and I'm going to get your Sixers take. More about growing up in Philly. You and Aaron McKee are boys, of course. But first, we have our halftime segment beginning with our Garage Beer six-pack of questions. It's brought to you by Garage Beer, beer-flavored beer. Find some near you at drinkgaragebeer.com. That wasn't a garage beer, was it?
No, sir. That was water.
All right. I'm going to give you a chance to choose between two things and just blurt out the answer. All right? Don't think about it. Just blurt. Are you ready?
Mm-hmm.
Cheese steak or soft pretzel?
Cheese steak.
Center City or South Jersey?
Center City.
Gritty or Philly Fanatic?
Fanatic.
Wow, because I know you're a hockey fan, right?
Yeah, I love my Brewer Street Bullies, but I got to go with the Fanatic.
Okay, Meek Miller, Hall & Oates.
Wow, sheesh, that's a good one. I'm going to have to say Hall & Oates because of their music repertoire.
Wow, okay. Dr. J or Allen Iverson throwback jersey?
Oh, gosh, man, you are really killing me.
Oh, come on, man, just blurt.
Oh, wow, sheesh. I'm going to have to I'm gonna get beat up, but I'm going to have to say AI.
You're not going to get beat up. Either answer's the right answer. Liberty Bell or Rocky Steps?
Liberty Bell.
All right. The six-pack of questions brought to you by Garage Beer, beer-flavored beer. Find some near you at drinkgaragebeer.com. All right, I'm going into my music library, all right? I'm going to give you a handful of artists from my library. You tell us if you have them or not. Are you ready?
Yep.
Biggie.
Yes.
You hesitated like a nanosecond with Biggie. I mean, I got to think you got tons of Biggie. Come on. The Beatles. The Beatles.
Yes.
Tupac.
Yes.
Metallica.
No.
Isley Brothers.
Yes.
Who was in your earphones before games back in the day?
Redman.
Why?
He got me hyped, got me antsy, and, you know, it was crazy lyrics that he was spitting. It wasn't nothing profane, or it wasn't nothing like I'm on a corner selling drugs. He was just doing some outer space lyrics.
Speaking of being on the corner selling drugs, that brings something to mind. And, of course, I grew up in a much different neighborhood than you, but my black friends would always tell me that in the hood, when there was an identifiable athlete, somebody who they knew was going to be really good in sports, drug dealers, gangs, they wouldn't mess with them. They would leave them alone. Was that true of you?
Oh, very true. Yes, very true. Especially I was living down on 17th Street between 17th and Master and 17th and Jefferson. And on both corners, the block was hot, but you know, they knew that I had played ball, which I was thankful for, that, you know, guys were still reading the paper because it wasn't no ESPN back then for high schoolers. But I was just thankful, you know, they saw it in me, and no one ever offered me drugs. And no one ever really messed with me as far as, like, trying to rob me or nothing like that. And I was thankful for that because, yeah, that is a blessing to have that pass.
Mark Jackson, we had him on recently. He would tell stories about
action.
You know, yeah, it's my man, by the way. He wouldn't eat unless he found money in the street, and he'd go to the corner store and get candy and chips. Was that a similar thing mm-hmm. for you?
Well, I mean, it was rough for me. My mom raising three boys on our own, but you know, with me being a baby, my brothers was able to go out into the world first, so I was able to pick up the knowledge that they had and be able just to, you know, help my mom out doing this, doing that, not asking for a lot. And that would just help my mom out with other little things. So, I mean, we didn't have the best. I didn't eat every night, but, you know, we ate some nights out the week. And some nights it was air sandwiches. And then, you know, other nights it was cheesesteaks or cheeseburgers.
Mm. How did you keep up your energy, like playing sports all the time and having to go to school? How did that work?
It was just fun. Just fun and eating junk. You know, candy, you eating the quarter bag of chips with the quarter hugs, or some call them quarter waters, but in Philly we call them hugs. You know, that was your diet mainly through the day. Shoot, you get $5 back in the day, you can get a cheesesteak, some chips, and probably a pretzel and a soda. So, you know, that little $5-6 went a long way back then. But it was just you was just a kid having fun.
So you're having fun, you're running track and you're playing football, but as I understand it, one summer you grew like, I don't know, 8 inches, some ridiculous figure like that, and that really got you into basketball. What do you remember about that summer and your transition into basketball almost full time?
Painful. Painful. I graduated eighth grade at 6'3" in June of 89, and I checked in to grad September of 89 at 6'10".
Wow. Wow.
So that was one summer.
So really, really painful. I mean, you felt it in your bones.
My knees and the back of my neck. Oh,
Unreal. Yeah. Thank goodness you had a great coach in Bill Ellerbe. You actually had a teammate in Aaron McKee, I guess, for what, 1 year? He was a senior. You're a ninth grader. And Aaron, you know, while he's telling me the story, and he's told it to me a couple of times, he laughs his entire way through it. Coach L had this drill where the big guys you stepped to run around the gym and they had to keep the ball above their head, and he said you hated that.
But you know what that caused for me though? Muscle memory. And I did hate that, because I'm like, it wasn't just me, it was the other bigs too. I'm like, man, why the guards ain't gotta do this, man? You know, I was mad, but hey. It did, and then here I am years later thinking about it when I'm a junior running with the ball up. All right, that's good for me, because one, as I said, muscle memory on every rebound. And then also as I'm running with the ball above my head, it's what all of this is, my lungs opening up, opposing to regular. You stretching, you opening them lungs up, and, you know, you just look at it in positive ways.
Yeah, and I got to think too, part of the reason for the drill is how many big guys make themselves smaller and prone to have the ball stripped because they bring it down?
Mm-hmm. Yep.
So I got to figure that had to be one of the reasons as well. All right. So Coach L and the late, great John Chaney, who I have religion on, of course, I'm a Temple guy and all that. Thank you. He obviously recruited you. But I understand you really had a hankering for Villanova, and you almost went there. Jason Lawson was involved, Alvin Williams. Of course, Alvin eventually becomes a Wildcat, but why didn't you go to Villanova?
Man, yeah, we were supposed to go. It was supposed to be a super team with myself, Jay Lawson, Al Williams, and Ty Weeks. We all were supposed to go as like that Philly super package. So, you know, we all used to hang out and we was talking about it. So then Al Will signed with Nova. So he's like, oh, all right, bet. So he was like, yo, when y'all going to come up, man? When y'all going to sign? Then next thing I know, Ty Weeks signs with UMass. And I'm like, oh, shit. And, you know, back then, me and Ty, we was Ace Boone Coons. You couldn't tear us apart. And I'm like, damn. And then Jay signed with Villanova. I was like, well, shit. I was like, all right. Well, Ty went somewhere. That was my buddy I wanted to play with. Villanova signed Jay. That's my other buddy. I'm like, well, I might as well go ahead down to Carolina. And, you know, went down to Carolina. I initially, though, to be honest, all jokes aside, I initially wanted to go to Georgetown.
Really?
Reason being, yes. Reason being, because I grew up watching Big East. I grew up watching Zoe. I grew up watching Pat Ewing and Dikembe. And that was the first time I've recognized and noticed a coach sending all three of his big men to the NBA.
Mm-hmm.
And even though it wasn't a dream of mine, it was still like, okay, that's the next advancement. That's the top level. So I was like, oh, yeah, I can mess with them. But my freshman year, I wouldn't have had a point guard. So I was like, nah, I need a point guard. And, you know, going into Carolina, I was blessed because now I have a returning senior who just won a national championship and my man Derek Phelps. And now I'm coming in with a five-star recruit that was the top point guard in the nation, and Jeff McInnes. So I'm like, I'm covered from the guard standpoint right there. You know, I got them too. And, you know, that's what made me actually venture down to Carolina was the fact that, okay, I had a guard. It really didn't have nothing to do, honestly, with the coaches, because think about it. There were four Hall of Fame coaches. You know, Coach Massimino, Nova. Actually, five. Coach Speedy Morris. I forgot about him. Coach Chaney.
Dean Smith.
Coach Smith. Coach Thompson. So it was like, it wasn't necessarily the coach, because, in my opinion, you couldn't go bad with nobody in that bunch right there. But I had to look at the actual team.
2 years as a Tar Heel. And then in 1995, your Carolina teammate, Jerry Stackhouse, he gets drafted by the Sixers with a third pick. You get drafted the very next pick by Washington. Were you wishing at the time the Sixers would have taken you at number three?
No. I actually told them not to draft me.
Really?
Reason being, I knew I wasn't mature enough to play at home my rookie season. Because it was still been just hanging out and doing this and that. And even though I love basketball, I probably wouldn't have took it as serious as I did. And I knew in my mind I wasn't mature enough to play professional basketball. I have to go to class. I'm getting paid to play ball. I got all my homies with me at the crib. Oh, nah. That would have been. But, no, I'm thankful. I felt as though I probably could have played for the Sixers later in my career. You know, again, when I was more mature, I knew the ropes of this and of that. But I couldn't do that my rookie season.
You had a really good career. You played a lot with the Portland Trail Blazers, of course. And I'm going to talk about how you ended up in Detroit. But I just have to mention this one thing. Kevin Garnett was actually picked right after you out of high school by Minnesota. And I got to think, he must have had some great powers of persuasion back in 2009 to get you to sign as a free agent, Rasheed Wallace, with the Boston Celtics. Come on now. Seriously?
Hey.
How could you do that?
You just don't know how much I got cussed out by everybody. Friends.
No surprise.
Family,
no surprise.
They was like, yo. They was like, damn, see, you could have signed with any other team. But damn, Boston! I was like, yo, hey, I had to do what I had to do. You know, that was a good year though. I love playing with that with KG for that year. I wish him and I could have been teammates. You know, in our heydays, little in our younger years, could have really tore things up. But no, I love that team. I found out about Rajon Rondo. I found out what type of person and player he is. Rondo, that kid works hard. When I was out there in Boston, I actually saw him in the gym every morning before and after practice trying to improve his jump shot. And it improved throughout his career because he stuck with it. But I love the tenacity in him. Seeing a young Kendrick Perkins, you know, Boston, they had a good team. Of course, Paul, he was up there.
They were defending champions, weren't they defending champions, what, 2008?
Yeah, they were a year removed. Yeah, mm-hmm. Year removed. Mm-hmm. And, but, you know, it was a good group of guys to play with. It was a good group of guys. Made some good long-term friends. Brian Scalabrine, that's my guy.
Yeah.
Some good guys on that team. Big Baby.
If I may ask, playing under Doc Rivers, and of course, he coached the Sixers for a bit. How was that for you playing under him?
Well, in my opinion, it's only one Doc to play in the NBA, and that's Julius Erving. So, Glenn.
Wait a second. Wait a second. You know that when I did Sixers game. Now, I made an exception when he became the head coach of the Sixers, but when he was coaching someone else, I always called him Glenn Rivers because there was only one Doc. So I'm with you on that. But go ahead. I didn't mean to interrupt.
Mm-hmm. But, oh, no, all good. But, you know, it was – I just kept my mouth shut and just sat back and watched. You know, you've heard about the this and that. It was always beef between Ray, Paul, and KG and other guys on the team. But, you know, I really didn't see it myself. We hung out a little bit. Guys hung out a little bit. But, of course, you know, you're more mature. You got family, younger kids. So that's pretty much – the most part that we hung out at outside of the road. But no, I mean, it was a good group of guys. You know, he had a good defensive coach up there with Tibbs, and he had a good offensive coach up there with Kevin. So, you know, they had a good little chemistry going on, but I was never a big fan of him. You know, I thought he was just an okay coach. I never would put him on that top tier level. But, I mean, it was cool. Again, I was just invited into the house, so I'm not going to cause no ruckus. I'm just sitting back watching.
Yeah, you were invited into the house, too, late in 2004 by Detroit. They traded for you. You actually got traded by the Blazers to Atlanta. You played one game as a Hawk, and then Larry Brown snagged you, and you turned out to be the one piece to put them over the top. How do you fit in there with a team that, you know, has championship aspirations and you're like, all right, you know, what am I doing now?
I didn't even know we were going to win a championship, to be honest. I felt as though that team could be special, but I didn't think that we were going to do it that year, you know, that fast. Just being able to bond with them. But I guess that just goes to show the mentality of the other players in the NBA. When I went to Detroit, it was never no personal stuff. Like, Chauncey never came to me like, all right, this is my team. You know, you got to do this. You do what I say, blah, blah, blah. I never received that from anybody on the team. It was always a brotherly love, and we just worked together. Again, I sat back, watched, because it's a difference when you're playing with someone and you're playing against them. You know, playing against them, you're definitely trying to shut down more of their strengths than expose their weaknesses. But playing with them, I'm trying to improve your weaknesses, and you already got your strengths because that's what makes you who you are. And that's how that team was. They had the logo already. They had the work, the uniform already, known as a blue collar team, you know, with Ben, Chauncey, Rip, Tayshaun, it was already there. You know, guys who work hard but didn't get that superstar notoriety. And with me coming there, it was no type of jealousy act on nobody's side. Like, I came in respecting those guys. Like, yo, this y'all team. I'm just here to help. Just figure out where I can help at. I'm not coming there expecting like, yo, I need to get the ball 25 times a night, like I was getting in Portland and this and that. Like, nah, I got to respect other guys because they playing on that level too. But the funny part about that whole story though, Mark, was we was in Portland. I mean, excuse me, Portland was in Detroit like about 2-3 weeks before I got traded. And so I'm in there talking big junk. And then, you know, how I always talk junk and screaming, and saying this and saying that. So then here it is. Fast forward 3 weeks later, I get in the locker room. So I'm like, hey, guys, you know, the things I said a couple weeks ago was just plain, you know, we're all friends and buddies now. So like, I ain't really mean all that.
Damage control.
early, you had to do that early.
All right, let's talk about our squad. First of all, just your favorite Sixer of all time.
I would have to say, for me, it's 3-1. I would have to say between Doc, Rick Mahorn, and Chuck Barkley.
Ooh, I'm intrigued by Mahorn. I mean, you hear Doc and Charles certainly in conversations like that. Rick, I mean, I had big love for his game and the way he played. And clearly you did too. I just remember when he played with the Sixers in the late 80s, how good he was at being the spine of the defense, putting guys in position and calling out. You know what I'm talking about, right? Okay.
Yep.
So is that what you liked about him? And his physical style, of course.
Well, not only that, but it was a chance that he was probably one of the first NBA guys that I ever interacted with. When I was about 14, 15 years old, I used to play pickup games with the Sixers down at CCP. And you know, that's the first time I really got my ass beat.
Wait, so what year is that? What year is that?
That was like 89.
Okay.
Like 88, that's, 89. That's
a good team. A good team. I mean, that's an Atlantic Division title winner there.
So playing against Rick Mahorn, Barkley, and Mike Jaminski.
And how old are you? How old are you?
I was like about 15.
Wow. Okay.
And those are the three main big men that
How did you get into those runs? How did you get into those runs?
Knew some people down there at CCP who told me that they used to be down there in the summertime.
Okay.
So I was like, bet. So I had a chance to meet them all. Hersey Hawkins, Ron Anderson. You know, I had a chance to meet all those guys. But Rick actually was the one that at certain points pulled me to the side after beating my ass and giving me elbows, pulled me to the side like, hey, young fella, you know, position yourself like this. You got to be able to see boom, boom, boom. And so I'm just soaking it up like a sponge because, like, this is the first time ever, number one, I'm really meeting NBA guys. And then this dude is actually giving me some pointers. And I ain't nobody. I'm some snot-nosed little kid. And so Rick always had that love for me. And then when I got to Detroit, you know, he was doing radio there, still is today. Mm-hmm. And you know, it's always been my guy right there.
Joel Embiid, if he can come back with 3 games left in the season, 1 game left in the season, 3 games into the first round of the playoffs, assuming they don't have, you know, they don't finish, you know, 9 through
yeah.
10, 11, 12, whatever. Does he come back or does he sit out till next year?
If I'm front office, as much as I hate it, I'm sitting him out till next year.
Why?
Reason being, one, let's find out the character of our team. We know with Embiid, we know who we are. We know that we're going to go to him. We know he's our main guy. He's going to be defending down there, grabbing boards for us, changing shots and blocking shots. We know we can definitely depend and get at least 25 every night out of him, right? So here we have it. So now he's out. Okay, so now what's the character of our team? We have to figure that out. Okay, we know Maxey's a good young player, but he hasn't been there to be able to carry us, or he hasn't played enough games in the playoffs to be able to get that playoff rah-rah, that playoff dog. But it's not just him. It's a lot of the other young players on our team as well. So to jeopardize our big man for future games, no, I'm going to sit him out. No matter how many games we got left, no matter if we're 1 game out of that final spot or if we're going to have to do a dogfight for the final spot, we're going to have to figure out what type of team we are. We know what he could do. We have to compliment him, not him compliment us. And that's the mindset that they have to have. So, all right, let's go into this playoff. Let's go in and first let's make this playoff. Then let's go into it like, look, whoever we playing, we know it's going to be a higher seed. Let's get them a run for the money. Let's go and show them what we got. If we fall short, cool. You know, it's not a real loss for us because no one's expecting us to win anyway. But if we beat somebody, beat a team a round or two, hey, making some noise, and we doing this without the big fella, just imagine what we do next year when he comes back. Because he was having a phenomenal season. I think he was going to shatter some records this season with the way that he was scoring starting the year off. 30 here, 35, 40, 28, 29, and 10. And I'm like, damn, young fella's showing like I am the MVP and this is my year. We're going to bust ass. And then, unfortunately, you know, the wheels on the bus fell off and it was like, sheesh.
He's 30 years old now, and I worry about him because, you know, he's had a lot of wear and tear from the injuries, and You know, mm-hmm. he's always diving on the floor. If you could put your arm around Joel Embiid and give him some talk, what would you say to him?
Stay down there on the block. That's where it's at. That's where it's going to be easier for you at. All the catching the ball at the top on a wing and you trying to do a hesitation crossover and between your legs and all that for a pull-up jump shot and you 7'3", you the tallest dude out there. Stay down there on the block. Get that easy money. He makes it hard for himself. Now, yeah, he can shoot it a little bit. He can shoot the three a little bit. But that shot, you make it hard for yourself. Mm-hmm. You the biggest dude out here on the court. And then you might not even have another 7-footer guarding you. Yo, get down there on them blocks. Somebody got in his ear this summer and told him that, yo, get down there on them blocks. Get that money. Because you see he's taking, well, with the stats that he has, he's taking less jump shots. And he's taking more paint shots, more going to the basket shots, opposing to just now settling for the three and this and that.
Mm-hmm. Rasheed, just a couple more things. I'm going to let you go. You've done a ton in the community and really a lot people just don't know about because you just pull money out of your own pocket and do what you have to do. And there's little, if any, fanfare. Although there is one thing that you do and you seem to do it a lot. And that includes the city of Flint. Of course, you played in Detroit with the Pistons, dealing with them and that horrible situation with that questionable drinking water. Why has that become such a passion for you?
Because that's a necessity. Just think about it. Like, who would ever have thought that a city here in America would be like a third world country with contaminated water? You know, that's like... Okay, we've all took trips to Cancun and Acapulco and all that. What they say? Don't drink the water. Don't get nothing with ice in it. Don't get no slushies, all that. Why? Because it's that bacteria in that water that goes against our probiotics in our stomach. And next thing you know, it's coming out of both ends. Mm. So it's like we're here in America. And I know for me, I wasn't doing nothing. And why not go up there and help, you know? So I called my cousins in Philly, the homies in Philly, got some homies down here in Carolina, and we met up there in Detroit, and we've done it quite a few times. And again, it's not, I don't care about the social media outlook on it or who knows what news channel, because it's not about that. Because for me, why I do it from my pocket is so I won't have to jump through the hoops political cats or somebody with an agenda with this and that. Nah, because while y'all trying to figure that out, these people still need help. And that's not just with Flint. It's everywhere with different situations. These people still need help while y'all trying to figure out this and that. Nah, little Johnny sitting up there starving every night because y'all can't get along with the food bill to get the kids some extra food from school when they leave from school. Or, you know, whatever the case may be, speaking hypothetically. But Everyone deserves help. Everyone needs help. And for me, if I'm able to give it and do it, then, you know, I'm there. We've done it again. Like I said, we've done the Flint thing quite a few times. We've done other outreach programs in Detroit, in Philly, down here in Carolina. And it's all from the muscle. You know, I'm not looking for no return. Again, no notoriety. But what makes me feel good was just like I came up to Philly with my kids driving. And, you know, they built that new Wawa right there as you get off the highway. So pull into the Wawa. And again, I got a Chiefs sweatshirt on, right? And so it was a cop. And the cop boy was like, he's like, oh, damn, Chiefs. Like, come on, man, with all that Chiefs gear. He's like, I'm going to forgive you this time. Only reason being because I went to your camp. I said, huh? Wow. He said, I went to your camp at Gratz when I was a young boy. And he said, I became a cop today because you had some cop come up there on a motorcycle and talk to us and this and that. I was like, yeah, that's my cousin. You know, now my cousin, you know, he's a big wig in the mayor office. And I was like, yeah, I remember that. That was my cousin. He's like, man, he's like, you know, that's one of the things that sparked me to become a cop. And he said this in front of my kids. And he was like, you know, I just appreciate you, man. I was like, dang, I almost cried. I didn't even know the young boy, but I almost cried. I was like, man, That's what it is, right? That's my appreciation. You know, that's my acknowledgement. Just came from one person. It came from one person, and he said that in front of my kids, and that, like, man, that really lifted me up.
All right, old school, we're out of time. I'd love to talk more. Will you come back?
Oh, yeah, no doubt, no doubt.
My man. Rashid, thank you so much. Yeah, back at you, except for the Chiefs gear.
I'll make sure I have probably some Philly stuff on next time.
Thanks for being on Fresh 24.
Oh, no problem at all. Thanks for having me, man. Definitely, I'll come back again.
Hey, guys. Thanks for listening to this episode of Fresh 24. Please subscribe, rate, and review wherever you get your podcasts. Check out our friends over at Philadelphia Sports Nation, a local Philadelphia sports site covering your favorite teams across blogs and social media. PHLSportsNation.com. Philadelphia Sports Nation. PHL Sports Nation. Enhancing your Philadelphia sports fan experience.